gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Welcome, folks, broadcasting from our radio and television studios here in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania, where we broadcast each and every weeknight, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for joining us. Thank you so much for your belief and your trust in us as we walk through this minefield of current events together. But folks, don't forget, we have two websites, Hagmann and Hagmann.com. That's for the show. HagmannReport.com. That's for news, information, and analysis. And that's, we've got kind of a logjam in terms of, getting some information out. We're attempting to verify some information and put out some analyses, plural, on HagmannReport.com. So just keep watching that. Expect to have some stuff, have a breakthrough of that logjam tonight, early tomorrow. And again, you know, we don't, here's the thing. You are inundated 24/7 with news headlines. It's just incredible. We live in an incredible news cycle. So it's ever changing, and it's very easy to miss things that are very important. A couple of things. We were in Dallas, beginning of the year, and I don't have any pictures here of, in fact, you'll have to forgive me. They're on my computer, but I didn't put any up for the show tonight. Went to Dealey Plaza and, had done a lot of, actually done a lot of interviews. The reason I'm bringing this up is 53 years ago, it seems, wow, that makes me old then too. 53 years ago today, JFK was assassinated. Now, I was a young man, obviously, very young man, but if I can remember it, you have to cut me in half and count the rings to see how old I am, or carbon date me, I'm not sure. But yeah, 53 years ago today, Kennedy was assassinated in Dealey Plaza. Now, the reason I bring this up is because, well, a couple, two reasons. Number one, it has relevance to today, and number two, you always have to kind of watch what the government puts out quietly. In a second here, I'm going to get into that. Tonight, we've got a great show lined up for you. Joel Richardson, joelstrumpet.com. He's been on Fox News. He's been on all of the major media channels. He's a New York Times best-selling author. I'm going to be talking about the geopolitics. The Middle East, particular Turkey, watch Turkey. And he's written about the Islamic Antichrist. Now, I've got some questions for him on that. And then after that, of course, we're going to have Stan Dale from standale.com. So we got a great show for lined up for you. But with respect to Kennedy, and I just want to touch on this briefly. 53 years ago today, assassinated. And, you know, that was a coup in America. Some say America lost her innocence on that day, and I suppose that's true. That started the string of assassinations in the 60s, of course. And as we looked at it, there's just no way Oswald was the assassin or acted alone, in my view. The reason I'm bringing this up now, again, because we are entering Dealey Plaza as a country. I truly believe that. There's a coup underway in America. Whether it's, you're talking about the covert power grab. It almost depends on what your perspective is. If you are a pro-Hillary, which is doubtful you'd be listening to this program anyway, but if you're pro-Hillary, you'd say, well, there's a coup. A coup happened. If you're pro-Trump, I you could say, definitely a coup that took place. But different perspectives on that. but released in the CIA publication on September 29th of 2014, now that's 2 years ago, over 2 years ago, was this document. I don't expect you to see it. It's fine. The document is really, it's a CIA publication. Death of a President, DCI John McCone, and the assassination of John F. Kennedy. I don't know how many people have ever heard the name John McCone. Not a household name, however, or today anyway. Politico back last year did a story on this report. And Philip Sheenan wrote an article for Politico. Yes, and here's the title of the article. Yes, the CIA director was part of the JFK assassination cover-up. Let me say that again. Yes, the CIA director was part of the JFK assassination cover-up. And when I read the headline, again, this is from last year, doing research for the JFK assassination, just doing research for it, seeing the release of this document, looking at this article, John McCone came to the CIA. He was an outsider in the CIA. Just briefly about him. By profession, he was an industrialist and an engineer, I guess. He replaced Alan Dulles at the time as director of the CIA in November 1961 after JFK had forced out Dulles following the Fidel Castro invading Cuba's Bay of Pigs fiasco. You know all about that, of course. Well, after Kennedy's assassination in Dallas back in November 63, Johnson kept McCone on in the CIA. And what had happened was the CIA had information, at the very, very least, as this document released by the CIA, although even still somewhat redacted. The CIA admits that they threw a monkey wrench into the Warren Commission, into their investigation. And McCone was the front man to do it. The director of the CIA at the time actually withheld information from the Warren Commission. Not that that would have made a difference, but, you know, when people say, well, oh, it couldn't have been a conspiracy, you'd have to have too many people involved in this conspiracy. Well, wait a second. Not really. When you've got the director of the CIA calling the shots, you think of it this way. You know, think of your local police department. And if you have the head of the police department directing the detectives in certain areas, it's easy to control the investigation when you control the choke points. And this is exactly what happened back in 1963. So I just want to, I'm going to be putting this up on HagmanReport.com after the show. But I do want to, again, John McCone, director of the CIA, it was admitted, and you can find this at Politico from last year, but I've got some additional information, some updated stuff as well from my own research. But it's interesting how this report, the DCI John McCone and the assassination of President Kennedy, how this report identifies information that was not revealed to the commission, including evidence that the CIA might somehow have been in communication with Oswald when he was in Mexico City, and before 1963, and in 1963, and that the CIA had covertly, secretly monitored Oswald's mail. And a lot of people don't remember or don't know this. HT Lingual was the code name. The CIA actually opened mail back in the day. Now they just scan it, they read it. I mean, it's the same. Nothing has changed, I guess. You don't think your mail's being read? It is. HT Lingual was the operation back then, as named by Politico. But there's some very interesting stuff here about the assassination of Kennedy. And it's very relevant to today. If you can, Eric, if you can toss up, one thing I want to bring to everyone's attention as well is, let's go to the Trump card. The Trump card. All right. We're going to put up an image. I don't know how many people have Folks, you've heard of the Illuminati card game. I'm sure if you listen to this program at any for any length of time, you know about the Illuminati card game. If you haven't, of course, well, now you just have heard about it. There is a card. Now, allegedly, ostensibly, this card game was, these cards were published back in 1995. There have been revisions. There have been different. It's crazy weird how this goes. Is that on screen? Okay. Take a look at this. Take a look at this card. If this was indeed released in 1995 or at any time, I'll say before 2001, which I, based on my investigation, and how do you authenticate a release date with precision given the oddities of the internet? It's difficult to do that. But take a look at this card. It's on your screen. What do you think about that? Is that Trump? It certainly looks that way to me. Okay, so if that is Trump, what's the message here? What's the message that is being sent? I want everyone to take a look at that, because it's folks, if you're listening to this just via Global Store or BTR, there's a card in the Illuminati card deck with a man that looks an awful lot, or an image on that looks an awful lot like Donald Trump, and on the right there's a comparison, or on the left side of the image that we have up, there's a comparison. The card is on the left, far left, and again on the far right, and the text really at the bottom of the image, which looks an awful lot like it could be Donald Trump, and at the bottom of the image, which is visible on the right hand side, it states at any time, at any place, our snipers can drop you. Have a nice day. What do you make of that? And if that is the case, put that in context of what's taking place today with the riots. Riots. And think about this in the context of the inauguration. And one thing about the inauguration I want to mention, or one thing about the election I want to mention. I did a couple of, well, when I was on with Dave Hodges last Sunday, and I think a video about this as well, talking about the Electoral College. Folks, I've been getting emails about this. I know the Electoral College, it would be absolutely impossible, okay, to, nearly impossible, to throw the election to Clinton. I understand that. That was never the point. The point is this. There are 538 electors. And there's 306 for Trump, 290 for Clinton. Obviously, Trump has won handily. 306 for Trump. But aside from that, the story is not whether or not, for example, the Electoral College could be, you know, you could have faithless voters and then have a situation where they would vote for Clinton or throw their vote away, and then that would result in a Clinton coup of sorts. That's not the issue. The issue is the globalist harassment. Maybe I wasn't clear on that. Maybe I didn't articulate myself well enough on that. It's the globalist harassment from a global level. That's the issue. It's what is taking place behind the scenes. And also, have you noticed in the media, and have you noticed in general conversation, that there is a lack of language, precision with our language? We don't live in a democracy. We live in a representative republic. The Electoral College is, obviously, because we live in a representative republic, we have an Electoral College. Keep that in mind, because what these individuals, the masters of the coup out there, they're trying to overthrow our government, infiltrate and overthrow and divide and conquer. What they're trying to do is to capitalize on the ignorance, on the historical ignorance of Americans, number one. And number two, they're changing our language to reflect something we are not. But more importantly, in my view anyway, is that they will cast doubt on the legitimacy, as I've said all along, on the Trump presidency with the American people, because in that fashion, folks, then you can actually be more effective in your rioting. So I want to make sure you have that. All right. One last thing before we bring our guest Joel Richardson on. Eric, if you can you put up the 2017 cover of The Economist? Just very quickly. All right. Folks, take a look at this. This is we follow The Economist because we know it's a globalist publication, and in the cover, as you see right here, you see it's the world in 2017. I just find a couple of very interesting things. Look at the shape of the images on the front. It's all about Trump, Planet Trump. It goes from left to right at the Tower, Judgment, the World, the Hermit, and so on. Death, the Magician, Wheel of Fortune, and the Star. You take a look at this. And what message is this sending, the cover of The Economist sending, especially relative and in the context of what I showed you earlier, that being that supposed Illuminati card, okay, that if that was published in 95, if it was, then, you know, what message is that sending as well as the cover of The Economist? All right. We have our guest ready and waiting, and I want to thank him so much. Folks, if you have not heard of this man, then I cannot believe for a moment you haven't. His name is Joel Richardson. Mr. Richardson is a New York Times best-selling author. His website is joelstrumpet.com. That's joelstrumpet.com. And we have on the program description, or within the program description, we have links to his website. You can go to Amazon, visit his Amazon page as well for his books. He is the author of The Islamic Antichrist. I had a hard time, I had a hard time with this, because I've always believed that the Antichrist would arise from a European power as opposed to the Muslim world. Folks, when you go to joelstrumpet.com, take a look at the media. Take a look at his presentations, whether it be on Fox News or Sid Roth or wherever it might be, and watch and listen to what he's got to say. And even more importantly, if you want to pursue this avenue if this interests you, his book, The Islamic Antichrist, is exceptional. I mean, exceptional. It's compelling. And I have to take another look at this. I mean, I had to take another look at this based on his information. And, you know, the Bible predicts in the last days a very charismatic leader will establish a global following in the name of peace. We know that. Islamic prophecy predicts the same. You've got two signs. You've got the Christian worldview and the Islamic worldview. Islamic prophecy predicts that a man will rise up to lead the nations, pledging to usher in an era of peace. Now, Islam's savior is called the Mahdi. However, and he pronounces it much classier than I do, okay? And, of course, in the Bible, it's Antichrist. Well, Joel Richardson has done some absolutely incredibly stunning research. This book's been out for a while, The Islamic Antichrist. But I found all of his books exceptionally informative. We are lucky to have him on. Joel Richardson from joelstrumpet.com. Mr. Richardson, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you so much for the glowing introduction. It's a blessing to be with you.
I'll say this. We are blessed to have you. There's so much to talk about. I mean, from the Islamic Antichrist to what is taking place geopolitically with respect to Israel, you know, the rumors about Israel, Obama maybe dividing Israel, and then you've got the speculation of well, all things related to Israel. Then you've got Turkey, which I know you've had your sights on for some time. And then you've got, well, everything else. Where do you want to start tonight?
Well, let's start with what's been taking place in Turkey. Let's just begin from a purely geopolitical perspective and discuss some of what's been unfolding over just the past few years with the AKP party, the Islamist party that's ruling in Turkey, and some of the fairly dramatic things that have been unfolding. Because this, in my opinion, this is something that if you're a student of biblical prophecy, this is profound. If you're not a student of biblical prophecy, this is profound. You know, regardless of where you're coming from, what is unfolding in Turkey right now is something that everyone needs to, you know, wake up, pay attention to, and, you know, as I said, whether you believe this is the fulfillment of biblical prophecy or not is really not entirely relevant, because the world is going to have to deal with Turkey in the years ahead, and if we don't understand who Turkey is today, we're not going to be prepared for who Turkey is in just a few years.
Hmm. Okay. And you make, yeah, again, you make a very compelling argument about the role of Turkey, the role of, I mean, all the geopolitics of that area. And it's interesting that you had the foresight through your research to really kind of lead with this, so to speak. So, where are we at here with Turkey as it relates to, oh, I don't know, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself here, ahead of you, or basically ahead of myself, but if we're looking at the geopolitical importance of Turkey and America's relationship with Turkey, in the West, their relationship with Turkey, what is taking place, or what has taken place over the last 8 years under the Obama leadership here in America with respect to Turkey and Israel and such? What's the backstory here?
Sure. Well, first of all, you know, we need to just begin by acknowledging the absolute historical relevance of Turkey. Of course, the Turks, you know, before there was a Republic of Turkey, the Turks ruled the Middle East for over 500 years, over 600 years, through the Ottoman Empire, the Ottoman Caliphate. But, you know, of course, as we were coming into the early part of the 20th century, with the Industrial Revolution and the rise of the West and Europe, and the United States was prospering, Turkey became known as the sick man of Europe. They were really beginning to flounder. And along rose a leader named Mustafa Kemal, and they call him Ataturk, which is an honorific title. It means the father of the Turks. And really, he was a genius. He looked at the West, he looked at Turkey, and he decided the reason that Turkey was floundering was specifically because of Islam. And so he instituted this incredibly ingenious system of checks and balances, this political system that would essentially guarantee that Islam would not rule Turkey. And he believed that if Turkey was able to sort of throw off an Islamist government, that they could then compete with the West. Well, okay, so you had 80-plus years of the Republic of Turkey. He established the Republic of Turkey. The Ottoman Empire was broken up, of course, with the help of the Western colonizing powers, and thus you had, you know, these various nation states that were rather arbitrarily created, Syria, Iraq, Lebanon, Jordan, etc. And then, of course, Turkey. Well, all, you know, for the past 80-plus years, you had this very moderate Islamic nation. And so coming into, let's say, you know, just the turn of the 21st century here, from the perspective of the West, we were looking to Turkey as the model. We said, this is a perfect example of an Islamic country that's very moderate, that's very secular, and we wanted to replicate that model throughout the Middle East. So whether we're dealing with, you know, sort of the Bush Doctrine, which was, you know, to a degree following after the Reagan sort of model, we wanted to try to use Turkey as a shining model. Well, in 2002, you had the rise of the AKP party, the Justice and Development Party, and they're Islamists, but we viewed them as fairly moderate, and so you had this fellow who rose to power, former mayor of Istanbul, Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Well, of course, you know, since 2002, now here we are 14 years into the rise of his power, little by little, step by step, Erdogan has taken over piece by piece every portion of the Turkish government. So, of course, you know, from the prime minister, the seat of the prime minister, to the presidency, to the parliament, to the judiciary, et cetera, et cetera, all the way down to the local police. Step by step, he has sort of, you know, worked his way into power, even to the point where a few years ago, and this was really the final sort of final wall in terms of, you know, in his way of potential complete control of the country, was the military. Well, you have this episode referred to as Ergenekon in Turkish, and it was essentially a claim where Erdogan claimed that roughly 300 plus of the top military brass, top military leaders, were engaging in a secret coup where they were going to blow up various you know, landmarks across the country and fake a terrorist attack and blame it on the AKP party. So what he did is he preemptively, you know, overnight arrested roughly 300 plus of the top military leaders, and essentially he beheaded the military. He took all of his, you know, secular opponents out of the military and began replacing them with many of his own supporters. So really what we've seen is all in the name of democracy. Yeah, this is the way that he's framed it, is democracy and for the good of the country, et cetera, et cetera. We've seen a very slow, gradual dismantling of Kemalism, dismantling of the system of government that was put in place by Ataturk. And the final straw, you know, just happened a few months ago with the failed Turkish coup. And this is where we find ourselves,
Joel,
today.
We're gonna pick up right where we left off, right on the other side, because you wrote about this, the Turkish coup. You wrote about this WorldNet Daily on September 17th, 2016. Check it out, folks. Joel Richardson is our guest. We're going to be right back. Stay right where you're at. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Our guest, Joel Richardson, joelstrumpet.com. Folks, go there. And he has got some amazing information in the media section, his store for his books as well. You can go on Amazon or WorldNet Daily, WND, as well. He is perhaps, as far as I'm concerned, the foremost expert on Islamic eschatology that I've ever read, and his books are precise. He is a Bible scholar. He knows his Bible. He's been teaching. He's a talk show. I mean, Mr. Richardson has done so much. So please pay attention. Before we get back to Mr. Richardson, I do want to make mention. We asked the folks. You've been so great. The listeners have been so great with supporting our sponsors, MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com. They want to give something back here to you, the listeners. So listen to this. They're running a special from now until early next week. We're going to say from now until midnight on Cyber Monday, they have a special for you. Something like this. You place an order for a Minuteman rocket stove. Great stove. From now until midnight, Cyber Monday. Use the promo code Hagman and you will receive a Minuteman rocket stove plus a free forever size 1/2 inch 100,000 strikes fire striker. Now this is not the small one. This is the big one. All right. You'll also get a free 1 pound bag of Maya sticks, which is just fire starting tinder, and also free shipping on the order. And if you know the shipping costs, man, they could be. I mean, shipping is expensive. All for their regular price of $169.95. This represents a $63 savings. It's never been offered before. So go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com. Use the promo code Hagman for this special and save $63. Just type in Hagman as a promo code and they will take care of the rest. This is a great deal for Christmas. If you celebrate Christmas and give gifts, this is beautiful. Birthdays, any occasion. MinutemanStove.com. We want to thank them so much for offering this savings to the listeners. Again, our guest is Mr. Joel Richardson. We are talking, we left off right before the break about, the coup. And you can read, too, Mr. Richardson has got an article on WND, and it gets into detail about this. And there's kind of a little primer there, as well as the about the GOG Magog bundle as well. But just back in September. So go ahead, sir. Pick up where you left off in terms of the coup and what happened with that and the mechanics of that.
Sure. Well, one character that I have to mention that I didn't mention is a fellow named Fethullah Gulen. Fethullah Gulen is a Turkish Muslim cleric, a preacher. He was known as the weeping imam because he would have such passion when he preached. He would cry and really just had a huge following throughout Turkey. Well, it was uncovered in some sort of old grainy videotapes that he was talking about the need to infiltrate the Turkish government and infiltrate the arteries of the system until you have absolute power and take over. So he had been gunning for some years to try to, you know, get his people into the government in order to take over the secular Turkish government. As a result of that, he was going to be arrested. He fled to, of all places, rural Pennsylvania, where he's been living since the '90s.
Yeah,
you know, you've been to his place.
Yep.
Yeah, I haven't been there. I heard it's quite a swanky pad, but in any case, he's living out there in sort of, you know, exile, allegedly protected by American some CIA agents that helped sort of vouch for him and get him here and so forth. Regardless, the point is, you know, he was this Islamist who had his people in the government. Now, the AKP party had really ridden the backs of the Gulenists. These are the followers of Gulen. And they had rode to power to the top all of these Islamists that had been in the government. Well, what the coup was, and whether it was a legitimate coup or a staged coup, I don't think we can really establish that for sure either way. But the government claimed that these Gulenists were trying to spearhead this coup and kick the AKP party out. Really what this was a turf war between the ruling government Islamists and the Gulen Islamists, because they're both very cult-like. They both, you know, sort of revolve around following this one man, either Erdogan or Gulen. Many of Gulen's followers think that he is the Islamic Messiah figure, the Mahdi, that you mentioned earlier. And so, essentially, after the coup, the current president, Erdogan, used this as an opportunity. He has, you know, since the coup just a few months ago, he's arrested or fired or, you know, removed well over 100,000 people throughout the country. All of his detractors, all of his opponents in the government, I mean in the military, in the judiciary, over close to 3,000 judges in the education system, teachers, all the way down to just regular students, are disappearing. More journalists now are in prison in Turkey than any other nation in the earth. And so what you've had is the final straw, if you will, in the complete consolidation of absolute dictatorial power of President Erdogan. And unless, you know, barring some sort of a heart attack or, you know, something along these lines, he will be the undisputed leader of Turkey at least for the next 12, 13 years or so. They say at least until 2029 he will stay in power. And, you know, it's one thing, you go, okay, well, this is very similar to what Putin did. You know, this is not uncommon. There are so many parallels between what Erdogan has done over the past several years, but most particularly over the past few months, and really the rise of Adolf Hitler. Now, I'm always cautious, you know, we should always be cautious to compare anyone to Hitler or the Nazis. It's a very tired and overused analogy, but right. Legitimately, the parallels are striking because, you know, with Nazi Germany, you have this, it was sort of a one-off entity. You know, you had this German nationalist Aryan movement. With Turkey, you have an Islamist nationalist entity. It's not just a nation with a strong military. Turkey does, by the way, have the largest military in the Middle East. An incredibly strategically important piece of property, you know, as demonstrated by history, by the fact that they were able to rule the Middle East for 600 years, but this is the first time in history that we've had such an Islamist nationalist hybrid arise, you know, in our midst. We've seen nationalism, we've seen the devastation, an expansionist sort of imperialist cult-like nationalism. We've seen that with Hitler. But what we're seeing emerge in Turkey, the potential for it to be something even far worse than Nazi Germany is very legitimate, and that's not overstated, because if the greater Islamic world, the greater Sunni Arab world, is able to sort of be brought under that sort of paternal umbrella, that neo-Ottoman umbrella of Turkey, as you know, used as an excuse to sort of bring peace and stability to the region, then we could be dealing with something on a level that we've certainly never dealt with in my lifetime or your lifetime. So this is, you know, this is sort of the backdrop. Again, just from a geopolitical perspective, if you're a military, you know, if you're in the military, if you're in intelligence, any of these things, we need to be paying attention to what's unfolding right in front of us. And unfortunately, we're still functioning. Many in the government are still functioning from the paradigm of 10 years ago, that these guys are largely moderate, they're more secular-oriented, they're our greatest ally, they're part of NATO, you know, all of these things. And you go, okay, that was fine 10, 12 years ago. But those days are over, and we need to wake up.
All right. And it's interesting you compare his rise to that of Hitler. There's parallels. I understand that, and I understand the, you know, we all have to use caution when we make those comparisons. It's done without sensible regard these days in many occasions. But now Turkey is a NATO country. Turkey is, and I know that there has been geopolitically, I mean, we supposedly, as you rightly state, that I think we're behind the times with respect to Turkey geopolitically, from a military and even a diplomatic point of view. But I mean, is this with respect? Okay, let me just kind of back up a little bit. Is this the way that we have treated Turkey to date? Is this because we're not paying attention, or is this deliberate? I don't want to go too far into the weeds here, but man, it just seems like we are playing into the hands. Reading your book, we're playing into their hands almost as a Western power, the greatest Western power in the world, or greatest power in the world, America.
You know, it's a difficult one, because to a degree, Turkey really has the Western world over a barrel. You know, we've got in the east, there's the NATO military base, the Incirlik military base, and I forget the number, but I want to say they have 20 or 30 nuclear warheads there in Turkey. This was a big concern during the coup, is, well, what's going to happen if this guy just says, forget you, NATO? You know, are we going to go in there and, you know, the whole base, the electricity, the base was shut down, and, you know, we're going, suddenly we go, man, we've got a potentially, you know, Islamic dictatorship with suddenly 30 nuclear warheads. Well, thankfully that stabilized. But, you know, in terms of American military presence in the Middle East, we rely on Turkey in terms of airspace, military bases, all of these things. Again, the piece of property that is Asia Minor, it's one of the most incredibly strategic pieces of property in the earth. And now, on the other hand, you look at Europe, okay, well, all of the Syrian refugees are flowing where? They're flowing into Turkey. We've got roughly 2 million Syrian and Middle Eastern refugees in Turkey. Well, who controls the spigot? Who controls the faucet, you know, the flow of refugees pouring into Europe? Well, it's Erdogan. So, you know, with regard to the EU, he's saying, hey, we want EU membership, which, of course, then allows the Turks to flow virtually unabated into Europe. And if they don't go along with that, he says, fine, I'm going to open the spigot and let the illegal refugees pour in. And so, you know, he has Europe over a barrel in that regard. And, you know, with the Americans, with the United States, we're also in a difficult position, because if we want to be engaged in Syria, if we want to be engaged in Iraq, any of these places, Turkey is one of the most important entities that we have to sort of play nice with, and yet they're emerging as potentially one of our greatest future enemies. You know, and this really is the nature of American foreign policy. We create our enemies of tomorrow today. And, you know, we did it with the Taliban, we did it with Saddam Hussein, et cetera, et cetera. And I've been saying for years, we're doing it with Turkey, we're getting behind them, we're still treating them like the model we want to replicate. And if we just had a little bit of foresight, we could have seen that, they were already, you know, 7 years ago, getting out of control. And so this is a difficult chess match. You know, the Middle East is always a difficult chess match. But with this transition in Turkey, it's making it much more difficult. So, you know, certainly our leaders, they're in a difficult position. They need to be wise as serpents and gentle as doves. And I'm not sure that we have that right now.
Well, in preparation for tonight's broadcast, I was doing some research, and your books, folks, we're talking with Joel Richardson. He's a New York Times bestselling author. Go to joelstrumpet.com. Take a look at what he's got to offer. But in preparation for tonight, I found this. I'm going to just read this. It's only three sentences here to you. This is from, I'll tell you where it's from afterwards, but folks, listen to this. Turkey, well, this is a summary of a strategic paper. I'll just give you that much. And it starts out with this. Turkey sits astride Europe, particularly in the Balkans, or particularly the Balkans, the Middle East, and the former Soviet Empire, now known as the Commonwealth of Independent States. In addition, since 1980, Turkey has compiled an enviable record of economic growth and democracy and politics. For these reasons, U.S. policymakers have assumed that Turkey, a steadfast U.S. ally, is especially well-poised to play a role as an anchor in the North American or North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, of course, as a positive pole of attraction for the Middle East and the southern republics of the USSR, and so on. It just goes on that way. The reason I brought this up, as you were talking, I recalled seeing this earlier today. This is from 1993. Our diplomacy and strategy has not changed from that. From 1993, has it?
It's beginning to change. You know, we're beginning to wake up. And I think even with Obama, he was beginning to realize that there was a transition taking place. But, you know, as I said, several years too late. I mean, the signs were all there several years ago. And it's really only just the past couple years that they've begun sort of treating Turkey with a little bit more of an arm's distance. You know, as has been typical with Obama, he's been outplayed. I mean, he was outplayed by Raul Castro, for goodness sakes, you know, by sophomores. And Erdogan is a far more crafty fox than some of these banana republic dictators.
So if I'm hearing you right, just to summarize what you've already said with respect to Turkey itself, just to be clear now, the coup that took place, that, without really much of a doubt, that was an engineered, orchestrated coup from within in terms of this is a way to clean house, right? I mean, that's kind of the consensus here.
Whether or not it was engineered or whether or not it was a controlled coup is hard to say. But it has absolutely been used to ensconce and completely consolidate the AKP, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, President Erdogan's power. So I'm not exactly sure whether or not it was a legitimate coup or, again, it was clearly, they knew it was coming. Now, whether or not the people that carried it out believe they were carrying out a coup or whether the whole thing was staged, I'm not sure. But regardless, the end result is that we have the rise of an undisputed dictator in one of the most strategically important nations in the earth and clearly in the Middle East.
Okay, understood. Now, as we look at things, we look at Obama's ascension to power here in the United States, 8 years of reign from the Oval Office, his what I would view as a very pro-Muslim, pro-Islamic agenda. And the Department of State, especially under Clinton, in particular, as we saw with the Arab Spring, the birth of ISIS under really, I mean, there's, to me, all evidence indicates in my investigative experience would indicate that we have, we are responsible for the creation of ISIS. When I say we, I'm talking about the Western power structure, and in particular, the United States, along with the UK and France, and of course, headed by Obama and the Clinton State Department. That's my view anyway. But with the formation of ISIS, or even with the Arab Spring, the realignment of power here, how does that play into what we're talking about, the bigger picture?
Sure. Well, you know, again, the Middle East is always, you know, it's a chess match, but it's kind of one of these multi-leveled, you know, Star Trek chessboards. It's, you know, if only it was as simple as a chess match. And so really, you know, to kind of simplify it, it's a regional Sunni Shia sectarian Muslim conflict, yes, but it's a little bit more complicated than that. But just to kind of keep it simple, the primary two players that have been contending for control of that northern swath of the Middle East, it really is Turkey and Iran. And, you know, this goes all the way back to ancient history. You look at, in the book of Daniel, you had the demonic principality, the power of Persia, that was in conflict with what was called the Prince of Yavan. It's often translated as Greece, but Yavan actually referred to Western Asia Minor, the modern-day Turkey, and it extended over into modern-day Greece. But that whole sort of Aegean Sea, that Mediterranean area that included, again, the whole western half of Asia Minor. So you're dealing with these demonic spiritual principalities that control these two parts of the world. Well, you know, back in the book of Daniel, you have the conflict between the Medo-Persian Empire clashing with the Alexandrian Greek Empire. You move forward a little bit in history, again, those two principalities are clashing, and you have the Roman Empire clashing with the Parthians. A little bit further, you get the Byzantines are banging heads with the Sassanids, and then it was the Ottomans and the Safavids. Well, today it's, again, Turkey and Iran. It's just, you know, this regional conflict has been taking place for thousands of years now. It would be unusual if it wasn't taking place in our day. And so the Iranians have been using all of these proxies, you know, to, the Iranians are, they play the long game. I mean, they are some of the most slick players. They've been accomplishing everything that they wanted to accomplish, but they're very patient, very intelligent, very, you know, cultured. They know how to play the game. So, you know, the Iranians, in order to extend their arc of control over the Middle East, they've been using, well, of course, since we removed Saddam Hussein, took out the Sunni government in Iraq, they've been using the Shia majority government in Iraq. They've been using, of course, Hezbollah in Lebanon, and they've been using Bashar Assad in Syria, who's an Alawite, which is a sect of Shia Islam, or at least it's most closely related to Shia Islam. And so those are the primary proxies that Iran has been using, of course, as well as the Houthi rebels down in Yemen. But now Turkey comes along, and in order to sort of jump in the game, they used ISIS. So ISIS, in the same way that Iran was using all of these other proxies, Turkey, their junkyard dog was ISIS. And yes, you know, a lot of the responsibility falls on the American project in the region, again, because we looked at it, and the primary entity that we were going after is Iran. We think they're the greatest regional existential threat and so forth to Israel and to the West. So we're going after Iran. We sort of facilitated these so-called rebels, John McCain, Barack Obama. There's no question they were behind it, but Turkey stepped in, and they gave logistical support to ISIS. They gave, they were shipping weapons, driving weapons in right over the border. These ISIS fighters were coming back into Turkey and getting medical treatment. These kids were being recruited in Istanbul, hopping on a plane, flying down there to Antioch, to Antakya, rolling right across the border. You know, Turkey would put on a show and arrest two or three of them as 10,000 walk across the border. The past 3 years, you know, every time Turkey makes a show of saying, we're going to go after ISIS, who do they end up bombing? They end up bombing the Kurds. And so there's no question that Turkey has been using ISIS in its larger regional conflict against Bashar Assad, again, a proxy of Iran, against the Iranians, and against the Kurds. The Kurds are sort of a wild card in all of this. But, you know, this is what's unfolding. It's a larger proxy war between Iran and Turkey for control of the heart of the Middle East. And now it looks like, you know, with the Kurds and the help of a little bit of help from the United States, it looks like ISIS, maybe within the next few months, it might be several months, it's actually going a lot slower than the Iraqis had hoped. ISIS, at least in its the heart of its, you know, the caliphate, is about to go away. But I tell you, everybody's involved. You know, Iran, they've got their people on the ground. Turkey has their people on the ground. And this really is, this is not just ISIS. This is a larger regional conflict with the potential to pull the United States and Russia into the whole thing. And this is a big conflict that's unfolding right in front of us.
It is, okay, and I want to ask this. Folks, we're talking to Joel Richardson. His website, joelstrumpet.com. That's joelstrumpet.com. It's featured right here. If you're watching this via YouTube Live, it's right there on the on your screen. By the way, Mr. Richardson is a New York Times best-selling author. He's a filmmaker, teacher, host of the weekly television program The Underground. He lives with his wife and five children. He travels all across the world teaching on the gospel, living with biblical hope and the return of Jesus. Again, joelstrumpet.com. Folks, visit that website. But Mr. Richardson, in the 3 minutes left we have before we go to break here, 2 minutes left, Russia, Russia in this whole conflict, in this whole mess, where did that, I mean, we're being pitted against Russia in the larger sense, right? I mean, or am I missing something here? Because all of these proxy wars that are going on, ultimately, at the end of the day, on one side you've got the United States, on the other side you've got Russia. Am I correct in that assessment, or is that absolutely too simplistic?
Well, we're clearly the two biggest dogs in the fight. But we need to understand Russia's primary purpose for being in the region is control of some of those energy pipelines that crisscross there in Syria. You know, their economy relies on energy. And so that's their primary reason that they are there. You know, they're aligning themselves with Iran and thus Assad. And so as long as we understand their purpose, I think if we're wise, we can navigate without there being a larger regional conflict. But again, it's a powder keg. One little mistake, and you know, you could have the eagle and the bear going at it, and that's not something that anybody wants to see. You know, it's the election's been a nightmare enough. I don't want to see a war. I don't want to see World War III, but it's definitely possible.
Well, you know, on the other side of this top of the hour break, we're going to be talking, in fact, I'm going to be asking about General Flynn, about the election, about how that affected, or it will affect, in your estimation, what's going on geopolitically with respect to Turkey and other parts, of, you know, how everything kind of fits together. And you really have written a great book in The Islamic Antichrist. Although, again, I picked it up with the idea, I thought to myself, you know what, I know that I just don't believe that the research would suggest an Islamic Antichrist. But you make such a compelling argument. It's well founded in not just research, but scripture. I'm really rethinking everything. So you've picked up a fan, and a student, if you will. We're talking with Joel Richardson, his website, joelstrumpet.com. Folks, we're going to be right back. Stay right where you're at.